Welcome to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with my brother Rick, we examine current events in the light of God's prophetic word. The disciples asked Jesus a question. Tell us, what will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age? And Jesus' response in Matthew chapter 24, he said, "And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars." Folks, we are hearing of wars and rumors of wars in our world today. On today's program, we're going to examine the nations of Bible prophecy and the people of Bible prophecy, and we have our broadcast partners to help us do that today on the program. Rick, we've got a lot to cover. You're going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Let's get started with our first, Ken Timmerman.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Ken Timmerman with us. He is our expert on geopolitical affairs. His latest book, certainly relevant to today's conversation, The Iran House, Tales of Revolution, Persecution, War, and Intrigue. You can find out about that book by going to his website at kentimmerman.com. Ken, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
Well, as I talked about in my intro there, we are going to focus on the situation in Iran. Could you give us the latest?
Well, we know a lot more about what has been happening on the ground despite the information blackout by the regime. We know that there were massive massacres of civilian protesters, of people out on the streets, thousands of people gunned down by regime goons. About 800 of them, according to my sources, came across from northern Iraq. They were these Hashd-e-Shaabi, popular mobilization units is what they're called. They're Shiite guerrillas, Shiite militiamen, but they're Arabs. And so they don't really care about killing Iranians. In fact, they're very happy about it. And you could see videos of these killings actually surfaced on the internet during the week after these 2-3 days of killing. We don't know how many people exactly. The low estimate is maybe 2,400. A high estimate is 20,000. It was really a massacre, Rick. It was awful, heartbreaking. You saw videos later on in the week of morgues in Tehran, with at least one morgue in particular had at least 800 bodies in body bags. So it was just an awful, awful time. It showed, once again, the cynicism of the regime, the brutality of the regime. You had the Iranian foreign minister going on Fox News telling Brett Baer, "Oh, well, there were only hundreds of people killed," as if hundreds was nothing at all. So it really was a devastating blow to ordinary people in Iran. But my prediction is that you will have a period of shock and mourning. But that mirrors also what happened during the 1978-1979 revolution, where you would have a massacre like this, and then Khomeini, the Ayatollah, would declare a 40-day period of mourning while people basically dressed their wounds and got themselves organized again. I think that's what's going to happen here, and it will be organized more by Reza Pahlavi sitting here in the United States.
Ken, we've seen these protests before, and they've reached certain heights as people have protested against this repressive regime. The United States said through the Trump administration that all options are still open. What do you see? Is there a chance that the United States and President Trump is going to do something, maybe even militarily, to help these protesters and it maybe even potentially topple this regime?
Well, President Trump has really upped the ante here with his statements on Truth Social. On January 2nd, he said that we are locked and loaded. We will not allow the Iranians to massacre people. Then you have these massive massacres on the 8th, 9th, and 10th of January. Trump afterwards said, well, we're going to wait and see if they're going to execute prisoners. And then on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, he declared that they had halted the execution of 650 people that had been scheduled for that day. I think, Rick, what's happening is that the president is talking to his military leaders. He's talking to political leaders. He's moving an aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln, to the region. He's probably coordinating with Israel as well. And from what I understand, the president says that he only wants to act militarily if the U.S. military can give him a plan that will decisively topple the regime. But I'm going to make one more prediction here, Rick. I can tell you what he's going to do, Rick, something none of us can predict.
Final question on Iran. You know, you say he's going to do something that we can't predict. I know if he had his way, he would probably be helping the protesters right now. But there are so many other things in play here. The geopolitical relations there, Europe, China, Russia. President Trump has got things going on in Venezuela. There's domestic issues here at home. Could you give us maybe an insight into his thinking and all these factors that are in play here?
Well, look, we are now the world's only superpower. I think that's pretty clear. The Chinese could not go head-to-head with us, neither could the Russians at this point, except if they wanted to engage in a nuclear war, which I don't think they do. So we are the only superpower. The ball was in President Trump's court. We know that he's called Elon Musk, for example, and Musk has pledged to provide Starlink service to the approximately 50,000 Iranians who bought those receivers for free, because they had not been using it because they couldn't afford it with the inflation, with the with the collapse of the Iranian currency. So they're going to be able to communicate to the outside world using Starlink. This is very important because the regime turns off the internet before they massacre people. That's what they did this time, and that's what they will try to do the next time. Starlink is one way of preventing that. So the president is looking for all kinds of ways to enhance the ability of the Iranian people to protest, to rise up, to get their message out, because he knows how important getting the message out is. Look at his own political career, right? It's been he is a communications genius, if you wish. And I think he's trying to share some of that with the Iranian people and their leadership to see if they can shake the world's conscience.
Some information coming out this week that China is in an arms race in space. Can you talk about that?
Right. Well, we've talked about the Belt and Roads Initiative for many, many years. This is where the Chinese have tried to expand their influence all around the world in port cities, maritime influence, but also by signing investment deals with a whole variety of countries, most of them third world countries. So China has a worldwide network of investments and actually colonies, if you wish, especially in Africa. What they're doing now is putting that into space. So they're putting the Belt and Road Initiative into orbit. The information, Rick, has only begun to attract the attention of experts outside of government recently, but they've been doing this for a couple of years. They are signing deals to build tracking facilities, ground stations for satellites, space infrastructure that position Beijing as a gateway to orbit for countries like Pakistan, Egypt, Ethiopia, Venezuela, before we went in there, Argentina and Namibia. So you've got photographs now appearing on the internet of these Chinese ground stations, satellite tracking stations around the world. Look, I think what they're trying to do, Rick, is to expand their market share, but also to acquire a worldwide space and communication monitoring network. Why is that important? In the event of conflict with Communist China, they need to be able to communicate. They need to be able to jam our satellites. And these ground stations, these ground tracking stations, give them additional capabilities, which they did not have before.
Very interesting. Well, that is certainly a concerning subject. We'll keep an eye on that as we look towards the future. Well, my final time here with you, Ken, I'd like to talk about a few things. We cover the current events, we cover the news, things that are taking place, but there are things taking place behind the scenes, which essentially shape the news. And if we have a little bit of time here, I'd like to talk about that. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is the fact that President Trump seems to have a policy of pulling the United States out of these UN international organizations. Is there a reason for that? Can you talk about why that might be happening and if it's the right thing to do?
Sure, Rick. This is something that we have touched on before. Remember, I have a phrase for this: end globalization, but not global responsibilities. So the president is really fed up, and he is not the only one in this administration or in Congress. He is fed up with the waste at the United Nations. He's fed up with the anti-Israel dogma of the United Nations and all of their organizations. So we are now leaving 31 UN organizations and another 35 or so international organizations that really don't have America's interests at heart. They don't even consider America's interests. Marco Rubio, our Secretary of State, he said this week, the international system, quote, is now overrun with hundreds of opaque international organizations, many with overlapping mandates, duplicative actions, ineffective outputs, and poor financial and ethical governance. No kidding, Rick. So we're leaving UNRWA, right? The UN works in relief organization to help the Palestinians. Well, we know that UNRWA had been used as a shield by Hamas. We're leaving the UN Population Fund. We're leaving the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. We're leaving the UN, Council on Trade and Development, and a whole bunch of others. So I think this is just part of a piece. It is President Trump's vow to the American people, we will no longer be subsidizing organizations that hate America.
Well, I certainly agree with you there, Ken. And let's focus in a little bit more on that. Climate change, something that is being used by many around the world to try to control populations. Can you talk about that?
And to control the United States and to suck money out of the U.S. Treasury and away from the U.S. taxpayer. It's a hoax. And the president has declared it a hoax. Of course, all of us want to respect the environment. We want clean water, clean air. But that is not the issue when it comes to climate change. Climate change is about a global shift in wealth from the developed countries to the undeveloped countries so they can put it all in Swiss banks, by the way. So in November, there was yet another climate change conference in Brazil. They adopted a declaration on so-called information integrity on climate change. Well, guess what that included, Rick? That included an international organization to censor anybody who says anything against the climate change myth. You think that things are bad in the United Kingdom where they're actually breaking into people's homes in the middle of the night because of a tweet that the government doesn't like? Well, here, the UN would like to set up a similar kind of power around the world to go after anybody who disagrees with the United Nations and the World Economic Forum agendas on climate change, regardless of their scientific credentials or even their opinions, to go after anybody who disagrees with them. This is world government gone mad, and our president is going to oppose this with every fiber of his body.
Ken Timmerman reporting for Prophecy Today. Ken, thanks so much.
Absolutely, Rick. God bless.
Ken Timmerman, great job as always, Ken. We've got to take a break, and when we come back, our Middle East news update with David Dolan, right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. 2025 ended without the U.S. Department of State releasing its annual report on international religious freedom. And that's a problem because the most recent state designations were made in 2023 and expired December 31st. The 2023 list included Iran, Vietnam, Boko Haram, and the Taliban, and others where the U.S. government aimed to encourage religious freedom. If you're a U.S. citizen, find your place in the story by taking action. Todd Nettleton with the Voice of the Martyrs USA suggests
the issuance of this International Religious Freedom Report is mandated by law. It is not suggested. It is directed. And so I think it is a valid question to present to your congressman, to your senator, hey, why didn't we see this report in 2024? And now we didn't see it in 2025.
And A3 has appointed Janelle Stoops as its new U.S. president effective January 23rd. Already well experienced in missions, A3 was interested in her specialty, innovation. In a day and age where A3 is expanding into new fields, they're looking to her leadership to develop Christ-like leaders who multiply churches and transform communities across Asia and beyond. Stoops says,
I believe that in order to see the gospel spread to every unreached and unengaged people group, it is going to take godly, Christ-like leaders who are reproducing disciples to see movement spread to the ends of the earth.
Her ministry took practical shape in Central Asia, where she served with her husband and daughters for 10 years. Back in the U.S., she had nearly three decades of global mission leadership. Look for her hand in new collaboration, cultural agility, and commitment to clarity in complex environments. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. We're listener-supported by people just like you. By giving to Mission Network News, you enable us to keep the stories of God's kingdom coming. Look for links at missionnews.org. I'm Ruth Kramer.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today Radio, the program that looks at current events in the light of Bible prophecy. Well, we've reached the part of the program where we look at the Middle East in general, but Israel in particular. We do that with our good friend, journalist Dave Dolan. Dave, thanks for being with us today.
Always glad to do it, Rick.
Well, Dave, plenty going on in the Middle East, including what is taking place in Iran. Of course, things happening in Israel as well with Gaza. Can you give us an update what happened this week?
Well, indeed, of course, the whole world was focused on the situation in Iran, and in Israel's case, it's not academic, obviously, since Iranian leaders repeated several times during the week that they would attack Israel and all of America's allies if there was any action. So that was obviously the main focus of attention. But we did have significant news from Gaza. We had Steve Witkoff announce during the week that phase two of the ceasefire proposal and the transfer of Gaza to non-Hamas control has begun, he said. And Rick, we just found out yesterday on Friday that President Trump, who's heading to Davos, Switzerland next week for the World Economic Summit, is going to meet there with the president of Egypt, al-Sisi, and that they're probably going to make an announcement there of the formation of this 15-man Board of Peace that's being already formed, and it's a Hungarian diplomat that's unofficially leading it, but President Trump himself is supposed to be the chairman of it and will probably announce that. So that's going on, but we also had some fighting. We had the death of one of the Hamas military leaders in an Israeli strike during the week. It wasn't clear what was behind that exactly, Rick, but it did happen, and Hamas strongly condemned it and said Israel's violating the ceasefire, that sort of thing. And then in Lebanon, we had more action. We had a number of IDF airstrikes during the week against Hezbollah positions. Of course, this may all be that Israeli leaders are reminding their enemies that are backed by Iran that Israel is still there, you know, and whatever happens in Iran, they're still going to be there. But yes, the main focus was Iran and whether there would be an American strike there and what the results of that might be. Of course, as of now, we haven't had that, and it appears from President Trump's comments that his earlier statement that help is on the way, which was probably misinterpreted in Iran by the protesters, that it was right then on the way, and he may have meant something more general than that. And of course, it didn't happen. And he said the execution of 800, he said, nobody else has used that number, but 800 Iranian protesters scheduled for public executions on Thursday to demonstrate to everyone else what's going to happen to you if you oppose the regime, that didn't take place, and therefore things have calmed for the moment, and he's put the plans on hold. Of course, that coming amid reports, Rick, that Prime Minister Netanyahu, he spoke again on Thursday with President Trump, so on Wednesday and Thursday. The strike was expected, Rick, by most diplomats in the era on Wednesday or Thursday, overnight Thursday, and of course it didn't happen, that he said, we would like you to wait a bit, basically because we're a little war weary here. And that surprised people because, the foreign minister of Iran said on Fox News that it was the Mossad and Israel that was pushing Donald Trump to attack Iran and get rid of the regime, et cetera. Well, they would dearly love to see the regime fall, Rick. That's obviously the case. But we had a much different situation in June, where we had imminent nuclear weapons production on the table, imminent, within weeks. And Israel said, we have to go now. We have to deal with this. President Trump agreed. And it was a very focused, laser-focused operation against those sites and not against the regime itself or oil targets or anything else, basically, as some of their air defenses. Israel took more action against the regime, actually, and its flights in that time. But that was different than now, where the regime, as I said last week, and I've been saying for some time now, this is a deeply entrenched police state with a very large force backing them. It's not the army per se, it's the Revolutionary Guards, the highly trained, specialized shock troops of the regime that know that if the regime is overthrown, they're probably going to be at least put on trial, if not killed by the people. So they have every reason to continue to fight and to back this regime. And it's so therefore, it's probably going to take quite a bit of action to take it out. And also, President Trump still doesn't have the full amount of military hardware that he did in June in the region. In particular, then we had two aircraft carrier strike groups, one in the Mediterranean and one in the Indian Ocean, not far from the Persian Gulf, stationed there. Now they're not there. A lot of them were sent to Venezuela, to other places, but we have the Abraham Lincoln on its way, all reports say, from off the Malaysia, actually, from Southeast Asia, heading towards the Middle East, but it'll probably take a week or so before those forces are there. So basically, the Israelis are saying that they believe him, saying it's not off the table, but it's not happening right now. And that seems to be something that Israel can very much live with, because, again, they could have had weeks of Iranian attacks against them. Unlikely, but at least days. And, you know, for the result of what? Will the regime actually be taken out or not? A lot of doubt that that's going to happen.
Well, it certainly is. And it's not a cut and dry situation, to say the least, as we look at this. I appreciate your insight into the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and how the fact that they are essentially fighting for their lives. They have been oppressing the people. If this regime is overthrown, they are essentially dead men. I believe that's what you're saying. So you look at this situation, there is not one thing or one quick act that could take place that could bring down that this regime. That's what makes this such a complicated situation. And Israel wants to live, the Israeli people want to live in the land without fear of having to run towards their safe rooms or whatever they might need to do if Iran launches attacks towards Israel. So that's what makes this whole issue so complicated, isn't it?
It is, Rick, and there's another factor that we spoke about in May and June before the previous 12-day war last year, and that is that many Israeli intelligence agencies worry that Iran was able to smuggle some sort of a nuclear weapon, a field nuclear weapon, also called theater nuclear weapon, which you can acquire on the black market, frankly. There's other ways to produce it, possibly from Pakistan, et cetera, and that could be aimed at Israel. And as I said then, such a weapon would only be used if the regime felt that it was dead or dying, that it, as a last gasp effort to do what they exist to do, in their own words, destroy the Zionist entity. And of course, if they can, the United States, but certainly to destroy Israel or greatly harm it. So the Israelis are still not sure that they are out of the woods on that score. So again, if they felt that the regime was likely going to fall, they would be much more supportive of this action. Of course, they support the Iranian people, and they're very grieved to see what's happening, as President Trump is, and all world leaders should be, although the Russians and Chinese are allied with the regime. But again, if you took out Ayatollah Khamenei, as many people are saying, well, just do that, it's different than in Venezuela or some other places. Khamenei is in his late 80s. He's going to be gone soon anyway. So again, that wouldn't cause the Revolutionary Guards and the other forces with the missile forces, et cetera, to lay down their arms necessarily by any means. So a new leader would just emerge out of that. And who would that be? Would it be better, et cetera? So Trump seemed to want to just stop the killing and stop the hangings and stop the violence right now against the people and then think about the rest of it. But if they had continued after Sunday or Monday with the slaughter, the mass slaughter, probably he would have ordered something on Wednesday or Thursday. But Rick, again, the oppression, we're now learning more and more details. The oppression a week ago on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in particular was just absolutely brutal, with machine guns on tops of buildings firing down indiscriminately into crowds, and 20,000 may be a low estimate of how many were killed. We just don't know, but it was so brutal that the people are no longer taking to the streets, and the repressive regime has proved once again that it's still there, it's still strong, and we'll have to see, but I think there's going to be a real possibility of something still, but not a likely at this point.
Dave Dolan reporting for Prophecy Today. Dave, the only thing we could do is hope and pray. Pray for the people of Iran. Pray for Israel and peace in the Middle Eastern region. We know true peace will not be achieved until the Prince of Peace comes, but that is in the future. Dave, as always, we appreciate your insight. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Rick. God bless.
We're going to take a break right now, but we'll be back with more of Prophecy Today.
We're called to defend the unborn. This is Ken Ham inviting you to experience our powerful pro-life exhibit at the Creation Museum. Here in the United States, 60 million babies have lost their lives to abortion. Some professing Christians argue the Bible doesn't mention abortion, so we shouldn't have a problem with it. But the Bible does mention abortion. It says, "Do not murder." Scientifically and biblically, life begins at fertilization. All the information needed for that baby to grow is there. Nothing new is added. Taking the life of that unborn person is murder. And Scripture is full of commands to defend the voiceless, like orphans and widows. And that would certainly include the little ones he's knitting together in their mother's wombs.
Learn more about the Bible's answer to cultural issues such as abortion, gay marriage, transgender, and more at AnswersRadio.com.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with Rick, we're examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. I started out the program today talking about the question that the disciples asked Jesus, "Tell us, when will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age?" And Jesus said, "When you hear wars and rumors of wars." That's Matthew chapter 24. And of course, we happen to believe and understand that Matthew 24 pertains to the tribulation period. The whole chapter of the book of Matthew lays it out perfectly, just as you would lay out Revelation from chapter 6 to chapter 19, everything that pertains to that tribulation period. Because of Jesus' words in this passage, whenever there's an explosion or a conflict, especially in the vicinity of Israel, many people begin to wonder if the new war is a sign of the end times. If only people would read the rest of Matthew 24:6. "See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet." Understanding Jesus' statement about wars and rumors of wars to mean that warfare is a sign of the end times is the exact opposite of what he intended. Jesus was instructing us not to allow wars or rumors of wars to alarm or concern us because the end is not yet. Similarly, Jesus spoke of false Christ, Matthew 24:5. Famines, earthquakes, Matthew 24:7, warning that all these are the beginning of the birth pains. And what we're seeing right now is definitely the birth pains, Rick. As we are getting closer and we examine current events, we've talked to Ken Timmerman, David Dolan, and in this next half hour, we're going to talk to Itamar Marcus, a favorite of ours, as he watches what the Palestinians are saying. And then, of course, Winky Madad is going to come and give us basically what the average Israeli is thinking on the ground. And that's what we would like to hear. We want to know. We want to pray for the Jewish people. God is not finished with the Jews. That's why we take and we always examine what is happening in Israel, what's happening around the world. We examine them because God has made promises. He's made covenants with the Jews that he is still yet to fulfill. And God must fulfill those covenants that he made with them pertaining to the land, pertaining to the king, future king of Israel that had to be a descendant of King David. And we also understand the blessing that we get by honoring the Jewish people, praying for them, supporting them, those that support, those that bless the Jewish people, I will bless. Those that curse them, I will curse. Well, Rick, let's talk to Winky Madad and let's get the lay of the land in Israel as Winky Madad comes from the area of Judea and Samaria called Shiloh.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Israel Madad with us. He is a frequent broadcast partner of ours. He talks to us from the land of Israel, from his home there in Judea and Samaria. He's the former mayor of Shiloh, a man with all kinds of information for us. Winky, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me on once again.
Well, Winky, we've been talking to our other broadcast partners, and of course the focus last week and pretty much this week as well has been what is going on in Iran. And we look at this situation here. I've been getting different takes from it. I wanted to get your take from it, but not just your political take on it, but also the fact that you potentially could be there on the receiving end of missiles if there was a strike to be had in Israel. So you have, as they say, you have some skin in the game. Can you talk to us just a little bit about where we are right now? No attack on Iran, the protest seemingly still going on. Give us your take on the situation.
Well, of course, I think that almost every single Israeli is rooting for the Iranians, not only because if the Iranian regime is altered or changed or expelled, for example, as happened in Syria, where Assad ran away to Moscow, that will be very good for Israel and the region and for a few other places around the world that have suffered from Iranian terror. And that would, I think, be very conducive to building trust and peace eventually between a lot of people here in the region. I also would like to point out, since I'm talking mainly to an American audience, I will not get into the thinking of Mr. Trump because I'm not quite sure that I would be able to know exactly what he's balancing there in Washington, the reports he's receiving, the intelligence he's been receiving, and what he wants to do. But I would like to remind all American citizens that when America was fighting for its independence, foreigners, specifically Lafayette, if I remember my American history well, volunteered and came over and helped. So 200 and a few years later, coming close now to 250, nations assisted other nations in a fight for independence, freedom, and liberty. And so by me, if America does something, it's all right. I think it's on the side of the good guys. And the last point is, again, pointing to the immorality of many people in the progressive, woke, extra liberal camp in America, who basically haven't said a thing or only view Iran through the eyes of Israel as a colonial power, and the bringing down Iran will only help Israel. If that's their level of morality, when hundreds of people are being killed randomly in the street, where most of those protests are not violent, and certainly are no more violent than a lot of the protests I saw in America about 2 years ago or so, I think that's the background we have to put in our mind to be able to judge what's going on with Iran, America, and Israel.
I'd like to address those protests or lack of protest in just a second. But before I do that, there was a report coming out this week that Prime Minister Netanyahu is urging President Trump to hold off on an Iran strike. Now, does that make sense to you? And I think if it was to make sense, maybe it's because there's a good chance that if there is a strike in Iran, they may just start sending missiles Israel's way. And you've had enough of that in 2025 and in the last 2 years of the war. But can you talk to me about maybe why Prime Minister Netanyahu did that?
I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the security preparedness and readiness that went down last June. Perhaps Mr. Netanyahu was concerned, and I think that's a legitimate concern. However, if I was an editor at one of these news sites that you quote from, basically, I would have phrased it that Mr. Netanyahu has asked Mr. Trump to delay or postpone a strike against Iran to help the protesters there rather than, you know, cancel or hold off or anything like that. I would hope that Mr. Netanyahu is for helping and assisting the Iranians achieve what they want, and if it needs intervention of a limited military strike, I would think he would be for it, and I think that he would try to convince Mr. Trump to be for it.
Winky, you're a student of history. You know the Middle East very well. You've lived there for most of your life. We, for the last 50 years, have had this Islamic Republic in Iran, and they have been a state sponsor of terror. They have been essentially the reason there has been so much conflict with the way they are supporting Iranian proxies all over the Middle East area. What would the fall of this current regime in Iran mean to Middle East stability, Middle East possibilities for peace? What do you think?
Well, there are many angles to that, to answer that. I mean, there are economic answers, for example, that they would probably get Israeli help to correct their water shortage and shore up their banking system, which is running completely wacky at the present moment. The rial is that's their currency, right? It's out of whack completely. You know, I think it's over a million in comparison to the dollar and stuff like that. So, right? And all sorts of other help. It would, but more importantly, it would release them from an oppressive theological regime that doesn't allow women to sing in public or wear or not wear anything over their head if they want to. I mean, you could be religious if you want to, but you should be able to be relatively non-observant, shall we call it, if you also want to. All sorts of other issues that simply reducing terror by altering the agenda of Iran will return it to what many people don't remember. I happen to remember because I have white hair. But before 1979, Iran was a modern state that had commercial, economic, and cultural relations with many, many states around the region, including Israel. And everybody was happy. No one's happy in Iran at the present moment for all sorts of reasons. And I think, if I remember correctly, in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is a goal that America should be interested in, that all peoples could merit from.
Winky, as I promised earlier, I want to get back to that subject that you talked about, the fact that during the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza, there was so many people calling out Israel on something that they, I don't believe they were even doing. They were trying to prosecute a war in a very, almost impossible situation. But we saw there was marches in the streets, there was on the campuses, there were protests, violent protests in some instances. We don't see any support right now for the people of Iran. Now, there seems to be some kind of ironic twist of fate here that that is taking place. It exposes what I think could quite possibly be an anti-Semitic nature that was basically behind these protests earlier. Could you talk a little bit about that and why you don't see these protests, why people aren't supporting Iran like they were attacking Israel during the Israel-Hamas war?
Well, Rick, what I would like to say, and I'll sort of preface it, we've been on Israel here anyway, all over, has been on the bad end of the media. And we've developed a very short description of that situation. If our listeners haven't heard it before, they're going to hear it now. No Jews, no news. Mm-hmm. Which means that if Israel or Jews aren't involved in any sort of event that's happening, well, it doesn't make the headlines. If the Israel or a Jew is involved, it's headlines. So Iran, for them, is first on the first level, is not really on their screen, their virtual screen, right? It has nothing to do with Israel. I'm a revolutionary. I'm a radical. I'm a protester. I'm a progressive. This doesn't interest me. Okay. Like many other things, the Chinese Muslims, if I'm not mistaken to pronounce it, the Uyghurs or something like that, that doesn't interest them either. So that's the world we live in. You don't have to be Jewish and you don't have to be Christian. You have to be a moral person at the very basic element of your personality and your existence to be able to help people. And if you're not, you're not. And that's what we're seeing right now. And I think it's a bad mark on the so-called revolutionaries of today, that's their attitude. For them, genocide has nothing to do actually with killing people. I want to update our audience. For them, colonial theory or colonialist theory says that a colonial power genocides the indigenous people economically, culturally, or physically, so that whenever Israel responds to Palestine, quote unquote, we're committing genocide. That's what they call it. Doesn't have to be, we don't have to kill anybody to be committing genocide in their neo-Marxist theory. And it's really crazy.
It certainly is, and it's certainly a tough situation that Israel and the Jewish people find themselves in, as they seem to have to battle not only enemies on every side, but this false media narrative that is being pushed around the world.
Absolutely correct, and it's a poor commentary on contemporary life that we people who have, and now I'm talking to you in the audience, the listening audience, right? We have the Bible. You have the New Testament in addition. We have teachings and scriptures that allow us to be moral. Not only allow us, they basically command us to be. We don't need Marx, and we don't need Engels, and we don't need Lenin to know what is right for civilization. We have a better agenda, a better rule stick for what we should be doing, and we don't have to be embarrassed about putting that right up in front.
Winky Medad for Prophecy Today. Winky, as always, we appreciate your insight. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, and good night to you and our listeners.
Great job, as always, Winky, and we thank you for being on the program. You know what, and I love listening to him. I know I've said this before on the program, Rick. I love listening to him as he waxes eloquent. He's very philosophical. He approaches it from a pragmatic point of view, where he's just basically giving and laying out the facts. You know, and that's what happens sometimes with us as we get older in life. We through knowledge, we gain wisdom, and we understand this is not their first go around of seeing all this. This won't be their last one. And we do want people to understand that both Israel Medad and our next guest, Itamar Marcus, are not born-again believers. They are religious Jews that live in the land of Israel. We pray for them all the time. They know that. They know exactly where we stand as Christians. And as Christians, we should, and all believers should, support the Jewish people. Sometimes you can make an argument for not supporting the state of Israel, because not everything they make are good decisions, but we should support the Jewish people. Well, as I look at the news sources from around the world, you develop a worldview. You have to understand what the Palestinians are saying. And Rick, we always go to our good friend Itamar Marcus.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Itamar Marcus from Palestinian Media Watch. You can find out about him, about his website, by going to palwatch.org. Itamar, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, Itamar, you're a frequent guest to the program. And given the fact that this past week, the United States launched the second phase of that 20-point peace plan for the Gaza Strip, I thought it was a great time to have you on, because you mentioned in one of the articles on your website, this is a potential for the Palestinian Authority to come into Gaza as kind of the one that will bring quote-unquote stability to the region. Of course, we don't know how any of this is going to work out. We don't know what's going to happen to Hamas. We don't know if they're going to disarm. But can you talk a little bit about what might happen if the Palestinian Authority is put into Gaza?
Yes, that's such an important question, because some people, because Hamas did the atrocities that they did on October 7th, Some people say, oh, well, Hamas is terrible, therefore the Palestinian Authority is the solution. Well, in fact, I am 100% convinced that it was the Palestinian Authority education and messages that they were giving Palestinians for the last 30 years that actually created the power of Hamas. The Palestinian Authority has been teaching its people, Jews are the enemies of Allah. The world will never be fixed unless all the Jews are exterminated. We've heard this. In fact, in the last year, we've heard 7 times on Palestinian TV prayers, Allah, kill the Jews one by one. Don't leave even one. So this is what they've been hearing all these years. They've heard that the Jews are not just the enemies of Allah, but they're the enemies of all humanity, that every place the Jews go, the country suffers and the people suffer, and that every place the Jews go, they try to dominate and take over the country. And then they teach the reason why Israel exists is because the nations of the world wanted to get rid of their Jews. And that's why they put them they sent them away and put them here in what they call Palestine, which of course is Israel. So when you and then the people are brought up with these messages, and then the kids become 16, 17, 18, they say, hey, wait a second, if this is true, Allah wants them all dead, why aren't I joining Hamas? They're a religious movement that wants to kill all the Jews. And so it's literally the Palestinian Authority that created the power of Hamas. And what we need is a non-Hamas and non-Palestinian Authority. There are Palestinians who don't buy into all this hatred, and those are the people who we need in order to have peace.
Well, that is certainly true. And you talk about how this education that the Palestinian Authority has provided, which has basically brought up these children, this generation, to hate Israel the way they do and to be willing to attack Israel. We look at October 7th, what Hamas did, it was horrific. It was terrible. And now there are some that are saying the Palestinian Authority, well, they're more moderate. Is that something that you agree with? And if not, tell me why.
Exactly. They're not Mamar. And I'll tell you why. I'm just going to give you a couple of quotes from Fatah. Now, Fatah is the Palestinian Authority. It's the party that runs the Palestinian Authority of Mahmoud Abbas. I want to give you some quotes from their education, their educational magazine for children. Quote, the Israel, the evil occupation state, this artificial state, it's artificial because it is foreign. Another quote, read history well, there is no Israel. Another quote, the liberation of Palestine will be achieved through armed struggle. Another, the Zionist invaders will go into the garbage can of history. Palestine will be liberated and pure and purified from the occupation, meaning Israel's defilement. At the end of the period of French colonialism, all the French fled to France, and Algeria's experience assures us that the Jewish settlers in Palestine will disappear in the end. This is not Hamas education. This is Palestinian Authority education. And that's why we have a situation that we have today. Because the Palestinian Authority is poison, no different than Hamas. The only difference between the Palestinian Authority and Hamas is that Hamas has been more successful at killing, and because of that, they're more popular than the Palestinian Authority. And the other difference is Hamas is so principled that they won't lie to the international community, whereas Fatah and the Palestinian Authority are hypocrites, and they're willing to lie to the Americans and the Europeans and tell them that they want peace. But they don't. And when we listen to what they tell their children, like I just read to you, that is what it says. That is what they want. That is what they believe.
You know, as we look at this situation, the United Nations for sure has the position that a two-state solution is the only thing that will work. That's officially the United States position. Now, there's some in the current administration who, are understandable of the fact that Israel doesn't have a peace partner. And that's the main thing. Israel does not have a peace partner. You talk about what type of partner they would need in order to move forward when our listeners hear of a Palestinian Authority or any entity there, any government organization that is a legitimate peace partner to Israel, that's just not the case, is it?
It's absolutely not the case. And that's what that's the message that we're trying to give over to the rest of the world, is that the Palestinian Authority has not only isn't it fighting terror, but it's been the driving force for terror. And I'll just give you an example. The world is talking about the Palestinian Authority security forces replacing Hamas for security in Gaza. Well, I just want to read to you a quote from a Palestinian Authority leader on TV last week, and someone said to him, well, has the Palestinian Authority Fatah given up terror against Israel, given up fighting against Israel? And he said, how can you say that? Look at the prisoners in the prisons, in the Israeli prisons. Most of them are from Fatah. The martyrs are all from Fatah. The security force commanders died as martyrs and carried out special operations. So what you have is a Fatah leader bragging that Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, has more terrorists in prison than Hamas does. That's what he's bragging about. So you know the Palestinian Authority is not a peace partner. They don't tell their people they're a peace partner. And the international community should start reading the Palestinian Media Watch website and hear what the Palestinians really tell their people.
We are speaking with Itamar Marcus from the Palestinian Media Watch. As he said, you could go to their website, palwatch.com. Well, we've talked about the plan for Gaza in the future, and you're going to help keep us updated on that in the future. But I wanted to ask you about one more article you had on your website, and this maybe goes to the crux of the whole issue, and it was the fact that the Palestinians are changing history. They're saying Israel has no connection to the land. This is what they're teaching their children. This is what the Palestinian Authority is officially putting out, and they are also essentially inventing history for the Palestinian people, taking them all the way back 6,000, 10,000 years ago, the Canaanites. Can you talk a little bit about that article?
Yeah, so the Palestinian Authority, as I mentioned a moment ago, they tell their people that the only reason Israel exists is because the Europeans primarily wanted to get rid of the Jews. And what they say is, Jews would never have come to this land on their own because we never had a history here. And it was the Europeans who invented Zionism and planted the idea in the head of the Jews. And then what they say is, well, look at the history of the land. They claim that there was a Palestinian nation and that nation, the Palestinian nation, was invaded by the Romans, by the Greeks, by the Persians, by the Egyptians, and even by the Hebrews. Even by the Hebrews. They claim that all of that was done to them. Well, of course, there was no such thing as a Palestinian nation, and all those things happened actually to the Hebrews, to the Jewish nation that existed then. But they literally try to steal. They tell their people, and they steal the entire history of the Jewish people, and as well as the famous Jews. They turn Moses into a Muslim Palestinian. They turn Abraham into a Muslim, and they turn Jesus into a Muslim Palestinian as well. They say Jesus was not a Judean, he was a Palestinian, and he was a Muslim. And we get many, many expressions of this in December every year, where they talk about the Palestinian Jesus. And they've even done many different cartoons that they've put in their newspapers and on TV, where you actually see a crucifix and you see a Palestinian on the crucifix, and they say, here, this is Palestine being crucified, just like they crucified the first Palestinian Jesus. Now they're crucifying us today. That is the Palestinian Authority's total distortion of history.
Itamar Marcus, you certainly put things into perspective, and we understand why things are the way they are there and why it is so difficult for Israel to have a peace partner and for any type of peace process to move forward. Well, we wholeheartedly endorse our listeners to go to your website, palwatch.org. Itamar, thanks so much for all you do. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks very much. Nice to be with you.
Great half hour of explanation. Thank you, Itamar. Well, we've got to take a break, and when we come back, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series is going to continue the Alpha and Omega Series. You might remember he started this back in November of 2025. That's all ahead right here on Prophecy Today Weekend. Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. This last week, we caught up with many of our listeners that call in to our office at 423-825-6247 in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And we've called and talked to a bunch of them, and they tell us how much they love the program, Rick. And we're so excited about the future of Prophecy Today and edifying and educating the body of Christ. Rick, we're getting ready to start a series or continue a series that we started back in November, Alpha and Omega. But if somebody wanted to get the series, where would they go to get more series from Prophecy Today.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. If you would like to get this series, or we've got other series, we've got books, we've got PDFs, we've got CDs, DVDs, we've got all kinds of information. We've got a bookstore. You can find all of this stuff at prophecytoday.com. You could also listen to some of our other materials that we have put out throughout the year, and you can go read our devotionals. We strongly encourage you to do that as we look at prophecy all the way from Genesis to Revelation throughout the Bible, going book by book. And of course, if you would like to support our ministry, we always appreciate that. We are a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate all that you do. Thanks so much for being involved with Prophecy Today. We look forward to serving you in the future.
Well, we are going to continue our series with Dr. Jimmy D. Young, the Legacy Series, and we're starting in the book of Genesis, the book of beginnings, Genesis chapter 3. Here's Dr. Jimmy D. Young and the Legacy Series.
Chapter 3, verse 1. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God hath made. The serpent. You know who that was? That's Satan. How do I know that? I read the book of Revelation, chapter 12 and verse 9, where it says, that old serpent, the devil and Satan. Was Satan actually a serpent? Or did he embody a serpent, take possession of? I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us that. But Adam and Eve recognized him as a serpent. Was he walking on all four? I don't know. Did he have any legs? I don't know. But I do know after he caused Adam and Eve to sin, God said, you're going to wallow around on your belly the rest of your life. That's all I know, what the text says. And then he comes up to Eve. Hey, did God really say you can't eat of the trees in the garden? I'm not sure. So he started to use deception, his subtle approach of telling a half-truth. Hey, wait a minute, Eve. Do you really believe God is going to kill you when you eat? You think you're really going to die? Let me tell you what I think God's doing. He's giving you a rough time because he doesn't like you being as smart as he is. Why don't you just go over there and eat of that tree of knowledge of good and evil? You'll be as smart as he is then. Then what did Eve say? Oh, she's starting to slip quickly. She said, well, God said, we can't eat of that tree of knowledge of good and evil, and we can't touch the tree. That's not what God said. He said you can't eat of it. He didn't say anything about touching it. So she's starting to slip. And ultimately, she listens to these lies, this deception. What is he? What is Satan? John chapter 8, verse 22 says, he is the father of all liars. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 says, he is an angel of light, so he comes and he deceives. And we buy into it. And Eve bowed into it. So she eats the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Adam, this is delicious. Come have a bite. He bites into it. All of a sudden, oh, Eve, you don't have any clothes on. Well, Adam, you don't either. You're standing there naked. And so he runs over and gets a fig leaf, or some kind of leaf, I don't know. Maybe it's an oak leaf or something, and covers himself. She does. They hide. It's about noontime, and Jesus is out for his daily walk, walking through the garden. Hey, Adam! Eve, where are you? Let's talk. We're over here, Jesus. What are you doing over there? We're hiding. Why are you hiding? We're naked. How do you know that? Oh, I know what's going on. And Jesus pronounces punishment. You see, Satan, he was the one who started the insurrection. What happened here, Adam and Eve? And Adam says, not my fault, Jesus. It's this woman that you gave me. And so Jesus looks at her, what happened, Eve? Not my fault, Jesus. This old snake over here told me to do it. Isn't that just like sin? Passing it along to somebody else. Never taking the credit for what you do wrong. So Jesus said, I tell you what, Eve, from now on, in childbirth, pain throughout all your generations. I can't describe it. I don't know what it is. Pain. And Adam, you're going to have to go to work. I provided everything. Now by the sweat of your brow, you're going to make a livelihood. And Satan, you're going to crawl around like a snake for the rest of your life. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. chapter 3, verse 15. I'm going to raise up a Messiah, a Savior. You might bruise his heel, but he's going to bust your head open. And indeed, that was the pronouncement of Jesus in the Garden of Eden. But that all sets the stage for an end time event. We have the institution or the inauguration of the Garden of Eden. Insurrection in the garden. There's going to be invasion of the Garden of Eden in the last days. Go to Isaiah chapter 51. Isaiah 51. Look there quickly with me. Isaiah chapter 51. Verse 3. Isaiah 51, 3. For the Lord shall comfort Zion, synonymous with Jerusalem, shall comfort Zion. He will comfort all of the waste places, and he will make her wilderness. Now the word like is not here either in the original Hebrew. The word is Edon. That's the word for Eden. And then it says, so it should read, make her wilderness Eden and her desert. The word like again is not there in the Hebrew. The garden of the Lord. The word garden. Gan is there. Edon and Gan. No word for like. So that's just an interpolation. The translator put it in because they couldn't believe we're going to have the Garden of Eden again. Go to the 36th chapter of the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 36. You remember Ezekiel 36 is talking about the land. It's talking about the land in 35 different locations in here. And it says that God will bring them back into the land. Over here in verse 11, it says the land's going to be greater than it was for your forefathers. Look at chapter 36, verse 35. And they shall say, this land that was desolate is become like, is not in the text. That again is interpolation. And so the text should read, this land that was desolate, the Garden of Eden. Hey, listen, there shouldn't be any question. Don't you remember what Lot said when Abraham brought him down to the Jordan River, Jericho Valley? He said, hey, Lot, which piece of real estate do you want? I'll take the other. Which do you want? He said, I want this right here. It looks like the Garden of Eden. Of course, that's what it was. It's what it had been. It was still beautiful, even at that time. And so it says, this is the Garden of Eden. Go to Joel chapter 2. The book of Joel is talking about the day of the Lord. It introduces that phrase used 72 times in the Bible. The day of the Lord is any time in history when God intercedes in the affairs of man personally on the earth. In chapter 1 of the book of Joel, it's talking about a locust invasion of the land. That's historic. Starting in chapter 2, it's prophetic, using that as a backdrop. Look here in verse 2. Remember, a day starts with what? It starts with the night and then the day. Okay, look what it says here in verse 2. A day of darkness at night, of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains. Now notice, a great people and a strong, there hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. A fire devoureth before them. This is a mighty militia that's going to be formed. Notice what it says here. The fire devoureth before them, and behind them a flame burneth. That's how a forest fire goes through a forest. The big flames and then the little flickering flames afterwards. Notice where it's going. And to the land, look, is as the, is in italics. That means it's interpolation, not interpretation. So it should read, and the flame burneth the Garden of Eden before them. What's it talking about? A mighty militia that will be formed to go to the Garden of Eden. Wow. In the last days. Oh, the Garden of Eden. Temple Mount, city of Jerusalem. Hey, the Jews are not the only ones that believe that. I want to tell you, I was interviewing Sheikh Sabri, the Mufti of the city of Jerusalem, most powerful Islamic cleric in the area. He was sitting in his office just off of the Temple Mount. I was asking him, has there ever been a Jew on the Temple Mount, Sheikh? He said, no, never a Jew on the Temple Mount. Boy, that ticked me off. I wanted to get in his face. I wanted to talk about Abraham taking Isaac to Mount Moriah. I wanted to talk about David buying that threshing floor from Ornan the Jebusite. I wanted to talk about King Solomon building that temple. I wanted to talk about Zerubbabel building the second temple. I wanted to talk about Jesus Christ, who as a Jew preached on the Temple Mount and healed on the Temple Mount. I wanted to get in his face. And then I looked at his bodyguards.
6'8", 290 apiece. I determined that wasn't the proper time to get in the Mufti's face. But I said, sir, you're telling me there's never been a Jew on the Temple Mount? He said, absolutely not. And he said, that Temple Mount out there, he calls it Al-Aqsa. That Al-Aqsa dates back to Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden. Islam believes the Temple Mount's the Garden of Eden. You start reading Islamic literature. The Mahdi, the Muslim Messiah, will appear. He will go to Jerusalem and set up the Caliphate. The Caliphate. The world dominion, the world kingdom, and a mighty militia from Daniel chapter 11, verses 40 to 45. King of the north, Syria, who's perched at Israel's northern border. King of the south, Egypt, who's ready to come in with the largest Arab nation in the world. Antichrist defeats them. Study Daniel 11, 40 to 45. Ezekiel 38 intercedes. Magog! Magog. Gog in the land of Magog. Magog's the land. You know where Magog comes from? Why, Magog was the firstborn son of Japheth, grandson of Noah. Genesis chapter 10, verse 2. And you know what? He went to some place, Genesis 10, 5, raised a family, developed a language, and started a nation. That's where nations come from. 10th chapter of the book of Genesis, after the flood. Oh, by the way, he had some brothers. You know what their names were? Meshach, Tubal, Gomer, Togarma. Oh, Magog went north of the Caspian Sea. That's modern-day Russia. Meshach, Tubal, Gomer, and Togarma stayed below the Caspian and Black Sea. That's modern-day Turkey. In the book of Ezekiel, chapter 38, they're going to come. Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey, an Islamic fundamentalist. They're going to attack. Oh, there's going to be some more. Chapter 38, verse 5, you know who Persia is? Until 36, they were, 1936, they were Persia, but today they're Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran. Kush, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Sudan. Put, Libya. Over in the 83rd Psalm, you know what it says? The Ishmaelites, that's modern-day Saudi Arabia. Tyre, that's modern-day Lebanon. These nations are going to form an alliance, and they're going to bring the coalition, a mighty army that's never been formed in the history of the world, into Jerusalem.
This mighty militia, made up of Muslims from around the world, will come to Jerusalem, the Garden of Eden, to set up a worldwide kingdom, a caliphate, in the place where the devil used his subtle strategy against Adam and Eve some 6,000 years ago. With this coalition of nations aligning themselves against the Jewish state of Israel, once again the devil is trying to take control of the world from the Garden of Eden, which is the center of the world. However, this time, the Lord will intercede and totally wipe out this attacking enemy of the Jewish people. In essence, the Muslim world will be rendered inoperative, as foretold in the prophetic book of Ezekiel, where the ancient Jewish prophet pre-wrote history to tell of the demise of the enemies of Israel. You can read this account in Ezekiel chapter 38, verse 18, through chapter 39, verse 6. Next week on our program of Bible study, we will return to the book of Genesis and study about the event of the worldwide flood as recorded in Genesis chapters 6, 7, and 8.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Rick and I will take a look at the book right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. Amid protests, the Iranian government continues to block digital communication. But one platform is difficult to silence, satellite TV. Sat7 broadcasts Christian satellite television across the Middle East and North Africa. Its Farsi language channel, Sat7 Pars, is reaching viewers inside Iran. Joe Willey with Sat7 says,
satellite television is virtually uncensorable. And so even programs we have, and we've done this, we can actually broadcast those programs on satellite television so we can still reach people with the gospel, and with the support that people of Iran need.
People are disillusioned with the Islamic authoritarian regime, but the gospel changes everything. Pray they take comfort in Christ. And more clashes broke out this week near Aleppo, Syria, between government troops and the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF. Over the weekend, the SDF abandoned two Aleppo neighborhoods to government control after days of exchanging fire. Now, more civilians east of the city are fleeing the possible escalation. Nuna with Triumph at Mercy Lebanon believes that Syria will fragment into separate federations.
This is a religious war. They're fighting against each other because of beliefs. And how can you topple that? How can you minimize that and say, it's okay, you just become friends again and make an alliance again?
Yet these clashes between different groups of Muslims are opening people to the gospel, she says. Media is helping to spread the good news of Jesus Christ. So pray for more people to encounter the light and peace of Jesus. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. We're listener-supported by people just like you. By giving to Mission Network News, you enable us to keep the stories of God's kingdom coming. And together, the Great Commission happens. Look for links at missionnews.org. That's missionnews.org. I'm Ruth Kramer.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. And along with my brother Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. Rick, you know, sometimes you and I have conversations about the program often during the week. We talk about who we should get, what angles. We're watching the news constantly. And as you examine current events, it's not something that we can really plan on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know, we wait for the latest events to come out. So doing that, and you've done a fantastic job, we converse back and forth about what topics we want to cover with our broadcast partners. And these all of our partners are very smart. And as I said earlier in the program, I talked to several listeners this last week, people that listen, and, you know, they have suggestions, and they love the program, and they, you know, it's just something that people want this information, but what should we really be using this information for?
Well, that's such a great question, Jimmy, as we look at this, you know, the things that are taking place around the world. When we have the gift of Bible prophecy, it's in Scripture. It was given to us for a reason. We are supposed to understand. We can read the Scriptures, and we can see the signs of the times. We can see what's happening. We can see that there's an urgency that we as believers who understand, who can read Scripture, and who look at it in a literal way, we understand that things are happening in a progressing pattern that makes it seem like, boy, the rapture of the church could take place at any time, because all of these things that we are looking at, things that are being put into place, the stage being set for all these things to take place, they happen after the rapture of the church. And we look at these things and we say, the rapture of the church could take place at any time. What type of urgency should we have? What would we do? You know, Jimmy, really just looking at it, what would we do if we knew the rapture was going to happen tomorrow? What would we do tonight? Who would we contact? What would we say? That's why we do this program. That's why we share this information. That's why we put this all together.
Yes. And starting out the program today, we talked about Matthew chapter 24. Again, I believe, you and I believe, and we teach that Matthew 24 pertains and fits very nicely with the time of the tribulation, which is coming ahead after the rapture of the church, just as you mentioned. And sadly, all of the things that Jesus pointed to as not necessarily being signs of the end times are precisely the things most people look at when they are looking at the signs of the end times, right? So, you know, it's about understanding that there are going to be wars, there are going to be earthquakes, there are going to be famines, there are going to be false Christ on the earth, and there are many of those today that people follow. But again, it's not the end, and the end is not yet, but we do, and I like what you said. You know, if we knew the rapture was going to happen tomorrow morning, what would we be doing tonight? You know, and that's the way we should live. Gentleman I talked to today out of Minnesota. You know, out of everything he was talking to me about Minnesota, he goes, you know, he said, but he did say that, you know, I believe in an imminent rapture of the church. And sadly, a lot of churches today don't believe that. So what hope do we give people as we, I know that you and I, we do try to give them hope, but what hope does the church give people?
Well, that's certainly true. And we do have hope. If we look at scriptures and we talk about how we look at the scriptures in a literal way, and we understand that all the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation can be understood if you study them. And, you know, Jimmy, focusing on the situation in Iran, and that's kind of a perfect example because we talked with Shahram Haidian last week, and he mentioned about how he is hopeful that there will be a regime change, but he also talked about the persecuted church there in Iran. And there are those believers, and the church is growing, even under probably some of the most oppressive persecution that you could possibly imagine. But they are grabbing onto that hope that we have easy believing here in the United States because we have the freedom to do what they can't do. We can meet, we can talk about it, and we are not afraid of being punished for what we believe. And so I think that's a great example. And this from a nation that we know is going to be involved in the end times, is going to be involved with what the Bible says takes place in the future.
Yes. On the Legacy series today, Dad talked about the subtle plan of Satan. Satan's subtle plan to get the world away from God, to get their eyes off. And really, that also applies to the church, because I do think that many of us look to the government to help us in the end times. Many of us look to the military. But for you and I and millions, that's my prayer, that it's millions, we look to the Lord for our answers, and then and going to the scriptures to understand Bible prophecy really does help us to understand. And I say that often. Sometimes, Rick, do you think that we sound like a broken record sometimes?
Well, I hope so, because we're not necessarily just saying these things because it's the only thing we have to say. We are saying these things because we believe them. We believe that there are absolutes that are laid out in Scripture. We believe that God has a plan. We believe that Bible prophecy is real, and it's a gift that was given to us to help us as Christians to give us hope for the future. And I mean, we talk about it all the time, the chaos in the world today. That's what we need, is hope that this is all working towards the plan that God laid out before time began.
Yeah, the one thing I could say, I love that. I sure hope that we sound like a broken record because it's consistent. And that's what Scripture is. It's always consistent. And you can know where you are. You can know what you're supposed to be doing by going to the Word of God. Rick, thanks so much for doing the program today, for doing all the heavy lifting I said at the beginning of the program. You sure did it. And I look forward to being with you next week.
I'm so excited, Jimmy, for what's going to happen this next week, and I look forward to doing the program next week as well.
Whether it's a civil war in Africa, strife between Israel and its neighbors, or the war on terror, no conflict today is necessarily a sign that the end times are imminent. No matter what wars and rumors of wars are going on around us, our mission is the same. And it just so happens that the mission is what Jesus says is a reliable predictor of the end times. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. Let's keep looking up until.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Jay Johnson inviting you to join us again next week for more of Prophecy Today. Prophecy Today is a listener-supported production of Shofar Communications in Chattanooga, Tennessee.